Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, October 5th. Midlanders celebrate $7.5 million donation. Midland Athletic Syndicate Vice President says Diamondback Energy sets an example on the way things ought to be done. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. There was a celebration of a $7.5 million donation in West Midland on Wednesday. Diamondback Energy presented members of the Midland Athletic Syndicate with a sizable investment to what is expected to be a 115,000-square-foot, state-of-the-art indoor sports facility at the Scarborough Sports Complex. The facility will be built with private funds, potentially as much as $30 million, and will provide Midlanders with a sports center that is home to 6 basketball courts, 12 volleyball courts, and an indoor turf area for indoor soccer and other activities. Travis Dice, chairman of the board and CEO of Diamondback Energy, said Wednesday the donation represents a way to improve the quality of life for its employees and all residents of the Permian Basin. He mentioned that the center will bring tournament opportunities to Midland and the Scarborough Sports Complex area. The facility also will keep Midlanders from having to make the excessive travel on Interstate 20 to Abilene and Dallas-Fort Worth. Quote, "There's a lot of momentum to try to reflect what we feel is a younger generation that's demanding more from our city," Stice said Wednesday. "They want places that are outdoors and venues to be able to participate in with their children. And it's incumbent upon both our city and our businesses that are headquartered here to step up and lean into that 32-year-old average age that we have in Midland that has younger kids. And it's really important that we take advantage of it now so that we're setting this up for future generations to live in Midland as a destination, not just a pass-through point." End quote. John Scarborough, vice president of the Midland Athletic Syndicate, stated the project is a good example of what Midland can do. Officials stated the project started in mid-February, and it wasn't long before Midland Athletic Syndicate had its nonprofit status, a City of Midland land commitment next to the dual stadium facility, and had set ambitious goals for fundraising and creating an indoor sports facility that is unlike anything currently in Midland or Odessa. "What Diamondback is doing, stepping up, sets an example on the way things ought to be done here," Scarborough said. "Midland needs to go forward. We need to focus on the future of Midland, the future of business here, and the kids especially. This is a great, great start, in my opinion. Midland ought to be fired up about this deal." End quote. Scarborough said there will not be membership fees, but an open gym policy. He added people and teams can rent courts or the turf area. The facility also will help the city with sports tourism opportunities and help fill the numerous hotels near the Scarborough Sports Complex in West Midland. Quote, "I think we're going to fill the needs for a lot of things," Scarborough said. Scarborough added that around $25 million of the more than $30 million sought for the project has been committed. Diamondback's donation is a naming rights sponsorship, although the name of the Midland Athletic Syndicate building will be decided at a later date. Groundbreaking could take place as early as spring of 2024, Scarborough said. Quote, "I just can't wait to see the facility and hear the laughs and the good times coming from the kids, because that's what it's all about," Scarborough said. "That's what we're going after." End quote. Civitas Resources makes $2.1 billion acquisition. Denver company spending in Permian Basin now totals just shy of $7 billion, analyst says. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Already making a splash with its $4.7 billion entry into the Permian Basin this summer, Civitas Resources is making waves yet again. The Denver-based company stated Wednesday it has agreed to acquire Venture Energy's assets in the Midland Basin from Vitol for $2.1 billion in a deal expected to close this coming January. The deal adds approximately 44,000 net acres and current production of about 62,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day to Civitas's scale. Quote, "In this industry, scale matters, but so does depth and quality of inventory," Chris Doyle, Civitas's president and chief executive, told the reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. Continuing the quote, "We saw the value of the scale position and quality of the assets and pulled the trigger," end quote. Andrew Dittmar, senior vice president at Enverus Intelligence Research, noted that Civitas's spending in the Permian Basin now totals just shy of $7 billion after its earlier deal to buy Taprock Resources and Hibernia Energy III from NGP Energy Capital. Unlike the Taprock and Hibernia deals, which were acquired through a competitive process, Doyle said the Venture deal was directly negotiated. It will also give Civitas a fairly equal balance between the Denver-Julesburg assets that started the company and its Permian Basin holdings. The DJ, Delaware, and Midland Basins are the three North American basins that offer scale and high-quality assets, he said. Quote, "The deals have transformed Civitas from a solely Denver-Julesburg producer to a company with meaningful scale in the Permian," Dittmar told the reporter Telegram by email. Given the lack of remaining acquisition targets in the DJ, which has become substantially consolidated, Civitas needed to either look to sell itself like peer PDC Energy did, or expand into a new basin. And if you are going to pick a new region to enter, there is nowhere better than the Permian. It has the most remaining Tier 1 and Tier 2 inventory, plus the deepest roster of Tier 3 and Tier 4 locations, as additional benches of stacked pay are exploited," end quote. The Permian Basin market is fairly competitive, and there is quite strong competition for high-quality assets, requiring a creative and disciplined approach to acquisitions, Doyle said. Quote, "We pride ourselves on being creative, but also disciplined," he said. Civitas is currently operating the Taprock and Hibernia assets under a six-month transition service agreement and negotiated a similar agreement for Venture. But Doyle said he expects the Venture agreement to not last that long because, with Civitas's Permian Basin team established, it can incorporate those assets more quickly. Dittmar continued, quote, "While no one doubts the Permian's quality, the challenge is buying in at a reasonable price given fierce competition for assets. The latest purchase of Venture looks to be a home run as the deal adds around 350 new net drilling locations with an average oil price of just $45 a barrel needed to break even on development costs. Over 300 of the net locations fall within the $50 a barrel key break-even pivot point investors look to when analyzing E&P equities, and there is enough inventory to sustain about 10 years of drilling on the Venture asset with the two rigs Civitas plans to run," end quote. Another home run for Civitas is the low emissions intensity of the assets, which improves Civitas's overall corporate emissions profile, Dittmar noted. Quote, while a company wouldn't buy a deal just to improve emissions intensity, being accretive to ESG goals has become another pillar for many public buyers, along with improving financial metrics and inventory, he wrote. For venture parent Vitol, the sale comes just more than 3 years after it purchased the assets from Hunt Oil. Vitol will still have its VTX portfolio company active in the Delaware Basin and may look to grow that position or enter a new play. It will also have an equity stake in Civitas as a result of shares handed over in the deal, which it will likely monetize when the company believes pricing is favorable, according to Dittmar. Business buzz. Tall City Meat Market expansion headlines Greenwood Retail Center. The story was written by Morgan Taylor Thomas. A new retail center is opening in Greenwood, consisting of local expansions and new business adventures. Off Loop 250 and at the corner of Farm to Market Road 307 and South County Road 1130, the Greenwood Plaza consists of 10,680 square feet and 7 lease spaces. The freshly built building also houses 5 tenants, one of which is a second Tall City Meat Market location, taking up 2 leases. The first Tall City Meat Market can be found on Big Spring Street. Other tenants include sweet treat store Twisted Sugar, offers handmade cookies with wild flavors, a soda bar, frozen sweet drinks and shakes, energy drink creations, premium vapor, Ranger Clinic, and Domino's. The 1,150-square-foot space between Ranger Clinic and Domino's is not labeled. According to leasing website LoopNet, property owners have plans for the rest of the site as well. Phase 2 additions will include a convenience store and retail office spaces. The site expects around 22,300 vehicles per day on roads around the retail complex. Currently, the projected development space for Phase 2 remains empty. The official address is 6009 Farm to Market Road 307. Located in a growing area, the Greenwood Plaza is located just 8 minutes from the community's elementary, middle, and high schools. New developments are also being built around the strip, including Beatonbow's Homes' new 101 residential lots called Pecan Grove, and Kingdom Developers' new 96 residential ranchette lots called Saddleback Estates. Around the corner will be 200 new lots known as Vander Ranch, courtesy of D.R. Horton. The Tall City Meat Market is already open and offering lunch items, grab-and-go food, and other menu additions. Twisted Sugar will hold a grand opening from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. Saturday. Sneak Peek, annual Texas-size garage sale, is back. Fundraiser benefiting Meals on Wheels programs at Senior Life Midland starts October 13th. The story was written by Mercedes Cordero. The Texas-size garage sale is back for its 34th year. The fundraiser benefiting Meals on Wheels and other programs at Senior Life Midland will start on October 13th. The early bird opening on October 13th has a $5 admission fee, and the other dates, October 14th, 17th, and 19th, have free admission. The doors open at 9 a.m. and close at 3 p.m. each day at 407 East Scarborough Drive. Some of the items that will be available are antiques, holiday decor, toys, clothing, shoes, furniture, and more. More than 110 volunteers will be on hand to help during the sale, according to Joan Huff, Texas-sized garage sale warehouse director. Every $8 sold at the annual fundraiser feeds one person in Midland, Huff stated. Quote, "Everything that is made here stays here in Midland," end quote. Meals on Wheels provides meals for more than 500 people daily in Midland.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, October 5th, 2023. Happenings. What's Up with Midland by Morgan Taylor Thomas. At Centennial Park. Movie in the Park, Scooby, Friday. Food Truck Wednesday, October 11th, 18th, and 25th. Pink in the Park, October 14th. Rise and Run, October 21st. Movie in the Park, The Addams Family, October 27th. At Colorado Street, Downtown Farmers Market, new location, every Saturday. At the Destination, Friday Night Live, Chris D'Anda, Friday. Karaoke Night, October 12th. Friday Night Live, Jerry Hart and Flatland, October 13th. At the Horseshoe, Taste of the Permian, Thursday. Rig Zone Career Fair, October 25th. Cruise for a Cause Car Show, October 28th. Permian Basin Hiring Event, October 31st. At La Hacienda, Treaty Oak Revival, Thursday. Luis R. Conriquez, Friday. Ludicrous, October 13th. Los Farmers y Herencia de Grandes, October 20th. El Chacal, October 21st. El Potro y Piperin, October 22nd. At Midland Community Theater, The Diary of Anne Frank, Friday through Sunday, October 13th through 15th. At Museum of the Southwest, Eclipse Day, October 14th. Sensory Dome Shows, October 30th. At Parks Legado, Farmers Market with Pumpkin Patch, October 14th. At the Tailgate, Party in the Permian, every Thursday. Family Fun Day, every Sunday. The Braden Joplin Memorial Music Festival with Lucas Nelson plus POTR, October 14th. DJ Pauly D, October 21st. Pecos and the Rooftops, October 26th. John Wolfe, October 27th. William Clark Green with Drake White, October 28th. At Tall City Brewing Company, Geeks Who Drink Trivia, every Tuesday. Tall City Beer Run, every Thursday. Oktoberfest, Saturday. At the Venue at Live Oak, James Carruthers, October 12th. Shenandoah, October 18th. At the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, Craig Ferguson, The Fancy Rascal Tour, October 11th. Late Night Catechism, October 14th and 15th. Cirque Musica Symphonic, October 14th. UTPB Choir Concert, October 16th. Reuben and Clay, 20 Years, October 18th. Aaron Lewis, October 19th. Casting Crowns 20th Anniversary Tour, October 20th. Permian Basin's 16 Hands Piano Concert, October 21st. Josh Turner Long Black Train Anniversary Tour, October 21st. Cinema Under the Stars, Hocus Pocus, October 22nd. Chorale Fall Recital, October 24th. Sound of Silence Tribute, October 24th. Temptations and the Four Tops, October 28th. Johnny Cash, The Official Concert Experience, October 29th. Three things to do in Midland this weekend, October 6th through 8th, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Pick your next cuddly quilt. Head over to the Bush Convention Center for the 2023 Midland Quilters Guild Show, titled The Circle of Friendship. The two-day program consists of more than 200 quilts, a quilter's market, silent auction, vendors, live demonstrations, and more. An 84 by 104 inch quilt covered in circular designs will be raffled off along with various judged quilt competitions. Tickets for general admission run $7, senior admissions $5, and kids 12 and under free. Learn more about the show and organization at MidlandQuiltersGuild.com. Friday and Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., 105 North Main. Try your luck at Oktoberfest contests. The annual Tall City Brewing Company Oktoberfest celebration takes place this weekend with a packed day of activities and specials. TCBC's Fest Beer Steins will be on tap while supplies last, along with a seasonal Fest Beer release, other drinking deals, German-style food provided by local food trucks, live music, a Stein hoisting competition, brat toss, and more. No entry fee or ticket needed. Wear your best Oktoberfest gear. Saturday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. at 3303 West Golf Course. Hang with the fam. Family Fun Day is back at the tailgate this week. Guests can expect at least 20 vendors, food trucks, bounce houses, sports on the big screen, and much more for the free-of-charge community hangout. Littles to seniors, welcome. Sunday, noon to 6 p.m. at 4401 North Big Spring. Sneak peek. Annual Texas Size Garage Sale is back. Fundraiser benefiting Meals on Wheels and programs at Senior Life Midland starts October 13th. The Texas Size Garage Sale is back for its 34th year. The fundraiser benefiting Meals on Wheels and other programs at Senior Life Midland will start October 13th. The early bird opening, October 13th, has a $5 admission fee, and the other dates, October 14th, 17th, and 19th, have free admission. Doors open at 9 a.m. and close at 3 p.m. each day at 407 East Scarber Drive. Some of the items that will be available are antiques, holiday decor, toys, clothing, shoes, furniture, and more. More than 110 volunteers will be on hand to help during the sale, according to Joan Huff, Texas-sized garage sale warehouse director. Every $8 sold at the annual fundraiser feeds one person in Midland, Huff stated. Everything that is made here stays here in Midland. Meals on Wheels provides meals for more than 500 people daily in Midland.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, October 5th. Heidi Olivia South passed away on September 27th at the age of 81 in Bellefonte, Pennsylvania. She was born on May 5th, 1942, in Whitehall, Wisconsin, to Hiram B. and Joan M. Hagee. She attended the University of Wisconsin of Madison for 1 year. She then came to Texas and married James R. South on March 10, 1963, in Midland. Jim passed away on February 14, 1996. Heidi worked part-time as a legal secretary for John R. Kerwin for 20 years. During those years, she was also active in PTA, Girl Scouts, and other activities in which her daughters were involved. In 1987, Heidi completed the Legal Assistant Program at Midland College and was employed by Leslie G. McLaughlin, attorney, where she worked until her retirement in 2007. Heidi moved to Pennsylvania in the summer of 2023 to be closer to her daughters and their families in Pittsburgh and Bellefonte. She spent her final weeks in the home of her daughter Jennifer in Bellefonte. She died peacefully on a beautiful fall morning. Heidi is survived by her daughters Jennifer South and Joni South Shelley, son-in-law Kurt Shelley, as well as two grandchildren. She is also survived by four sisters, Lynn Foss, Joe Prawn, Kristen Helgeson, and Jan Sikora, and one brother, Mark H. Hagee. She was predeceased by her parents and her husband. At her request, no funeral service will be held. Flowers and condolences may be sent to 428 East Lamb Street, Bellefonte, Pennsylvania, 16823, or donations may be made to a charity of your choice. Thomas Dwayne Beatty, age 53, died on Monday, October 2nd in Clayton, New Mexico. Memorial services will be scheduled. Thomas was born on June 22, 1970, in Midland, to Jimmy Dwayne Beatty and Delinda K. Beatty. He lived all over the state of Texas and worked as a supervisor in the oil industry. Tom Beatty and Marisol Valero were together for 23 years. In March of this year, he moved to Clayton to be closer to his brother James. Thomas was preceded in death by his father, Jimmy Dwayne Beatty, and by a niece, Destiny Baxley. He is survived by two daughters, Desiree Sky Valero and her fiancé, Jeffrey Hudnall, and Kirsten Chase Beatty, all of Midland, mother, Delinda K. Beatty of Greenwood, three grandchildren, a brother, James Beatty, and his wife, Tanya, at Clayton, sister, Melissa McKinney of Greenwood, and six nieces and nephews. Blanche A. Lawrence, age 92 of Midland, passed away on September 26th. A funeral service will be held October 7th at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel, 1502 North Lamesa Road in Midland, at 11 a.m. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com. Darnell Ridge, age 83, of Midland, passed away on September 28th. A memorial service will be held October 6th, starting at 1 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, 1502 North La Mesa Road, Midland, Texas. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com. Lucy Mi Yang Choi, age 56, of Odessa, passed away on October 1st at Focused Care in Odessa. Viewing will be held Friday, October 6th at 12 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home, with funeral to follow at 1 p.m. Arrangements have been entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home's crematory of Midland. Betty Beckham Smith, age 88, of Midland, passed away peacefully at her home on Monday, October 2nd. She was born in Ardmore, Oklahoma, on May 24, 1935, to Finley and Bernadette Beckham. She was the oldest of three children. She met and married Gay Dean Ragsdale in 1953 to start their life together. They had two children and one on the way when Gay unexpectedly passed in 1960. She later found love again in 1968 and married Foy Lee Smith. She is survived by her son, David Ragsdale, daughters Deborah Balason and Kathy Fisher, five grandchildren and eight great-grandchildren. The family will receive friends for visitation on Thursday, October 5th from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held on Friday, October 6th at 12 noon at Downtown Church of Christ, 505 San Angelo Street, with Greg Fleming officiating. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences. Sebastian St. Terrell Maher, age 1, of Kermit, Texas, passed away Sunday, October 1st, in Kermit. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. October 7th at American Heritage Funeral Home. Elsa Rodriguez is officiating. Arrangements have been entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, October 5th. Regional reps gathered to talk child care solutions. With the Permian Basin's infant population expected to grow 12% in 5 years, organizations and agencies joined forces to hold a cross-sector convening to find childcare solutions for the Permian Basin Wednesday at the Bush Convention Center in Midland. The event was aimed at fostering collaboration and innovation among school and civic leaders and community members within the 17 counties of the Permian Basin Workforce Development Board's service area and eastern New Mexico. Permian Strategic Partnership President and CEO Tracy Bentley and Executive Director of the Education Partnership of the Permian Basin, Adrian Vega, spoke to the media. "We are currently in a child care crisis. Many of our counties in West Texas and southeast New Mexico are designated as child care deserts," Bentley said. "This is having a huge impact on the economy because when parents cannot contribute to the workforce, that hurts the economy and families. Generally speaking, child care costs about $14,000 to $15,000 a year, but the average child care worker makes about $22,000 a year, mostly without benefits," she said. Bentley said they know that if parents could find affordable childcare, they would be filling some of the critical jobs available today, such as teachers, first responders, and the energy industry. She added that the region is experiencing growth like it has never seen before. "Currently, we have more 2-, 3-, and 1-year-olds than any other population in our area," Bentley said. She added that everything is on the table as a solution. We think the business community is going to be essential to solving some of these problems and presenting solutions. We want to see all options. We are interested in knowing maybe there's a regional pre-K lab like we did in Midland that could be started in New Mexico or West Texas. Also, we've got to start building our pipeline of child care workers because, as we've heard today, they don't make enough money to survive and oftentimes they don't even have benefits. So we've got to start working on that immediately, Bentley said. She added that PSP is hearing from school districts around the region that there are mothers that may have a teaching degree or certification, but because they cannot find childcare, they are unable to go back into the teaching profession. The other part of this that we know that is absolutely critical is many of our kiddos are not entering kindergarten ready, but if they have access to high-quality childcare, I think we're going to start to see improvement in that area as well, Bentley said. She added that she thinks they have known this was an issue for a long time, but hoped the market would fill the gap, but it hasn't. It's time for the business community, local leaders, city and county government, as well as other professionals, to come in and figure out what we are going to do, Bentley said. She said one idea is to create pipelines from high school with students interested in going into the child care field so they can easily get certified. They can have a dual credit program and also start attracting them to the industry much earlier than we currently are, Bentley said. Vegas said the backstory behind Wednesday's conference is about a year and a half ago. The Texas Workforce Commission put out a request for proposals across the state to learn more about industry partners, and each community is trying to solve the child care challenges faced not only as a state but regionally. With support from the Permian Strategic Partnership Workforce Commission and the Permian Basin Workforce Development Board, they co-funded a study. The Education Partnership of the Permian Basin was able to do a landscape analysis which focused on the 17 counties that fall under the Permian Basin Workforce Board region, Vegas said. The focus of that study was to look at child care capacity. This includes not only infants and young children, but kids in elementary school. Vegas said it's not only a school readiness issue, but a workforce issue. If we don't have enough seats, that impacts whether parents are able to go to work or not. That obviously impacts the economy as a whole. So really, the focus of today's convening is really to dig deeper into the landscape analysis, but then to try to come up with some solutions, workable, viable solutions, Vegas said. There are many factors that create challenges, such as not having enough seats, staff retention, and or licensing issues. Like most complex issues in this community, there isn't one answer, but everyone has to work together to come up with solutions. Funding is obviously the biggest challenge to this, and whether that's going to come through taking advantage of some programs at the state or federal level, Vega said. It's also going to require an investment. We have a number of people who are invested in these big challenges to help industry, he added. He said there are some industry leaders, members, who have banded together to bring in a third-party child care provider that might not impact the broader whole, but that impacts their workforce because now they at least have childcare for their kids, Vegas said. The way they saw that is they came together and put their funding together to bring that model. Another potential avenue is community partnerships that were allowed through legislation in 2019. Basically, it opens the door for school districts and community partnerships. So, for example, ECISD has partnered with the local YMCA, Vega said. That has enabled the Y to provide pre-K through 3 education for ECISD and childcare. Midland College did something very similar, but in a different vein. They were able to create Early Childhood Center that also serves as a learning lab that they just opened this fall on the campus of Midland College. But because it's in partnership with MISD, it will also then provide additional seats for three-year-olds for MISD, Vega said. CPB Corals Activities Director Engaging Students. Since arriving at University of Texas Permian Basin in early September, new Director of Choral Activities, Lauren Clark, has hit the ground running. Clark has been at UTPB since Labor Day, her birthday. I was interviewed and hired on a Thursday, the Thursday before the semester started. I hopped in my car that Saturday to find an apartment, went back to Kilgore in East Texas, and then immediately turned around and came back, Clark said. I was here on Labor Day, on my birthday, and then the next day, as my birthday present, I started with my kids. It was a very fast but very positive transition, she said. Clark was at Kilgore College as interim director of choral and vocal studies before coming to Odessa. When the pandemic hit, she moved in with her family in West Palm Beach, Florida. She had finished her comprehensive exams for her doctorate at the University of Southern Mississippi in May 2020. After that, the world felt like it was falling apart, and the best thing for me to do was to be with my parents. I'm an only child, and it was important for all of us to be together during that time, so I stayed there for 2 years, and I taught music to kids and adults, Clark said. A native of Seattle, most of her family lives in the Pacific Northwest. Her father got a job building pump stations in the Everglades that pull ammonia out of the water to help revitalize the ecosystem in Florida. What was supposed to be a 3-year job turned into 30 years for her parents. Clark said they just moved back to Seattle over the summer. She graduated from high school in West Palm Beach. After that, she went to Rollins College in Orlando, where she earned a Bachelor of Arts in Music with an emphasis in composition and conducting. She earned her Master's in Music and Choral Conducting from the University of South Carolina in Columbia, and is all but dissertation in choral conducting and pedagogy from the University of Southern Mississippi in Hattiesburg. What appealed to her about the music program at UTPB is that it is an undergraduate-only institution. Rollins is an undergraduate-only institution, but because of that, I was awarded opportunities that I most likely would have missed out on at a larger school with a master's and or doctoral program. My resume coming out of my undergrad was stacked compared to my friends who had gone to state colleges, she added. At age 20, Clark did a domestic study in Pennsylvania on Moravian music and got to sing in their festival and be a soloist. Looking for a job, finding an undergraduate-only institution was important to me. I also have loved being in Texas, so getting to stay in Texas was a total bonus. East Texas and West Texas are obviously incredibly different. I love them both. I'm really thrilled to be out here. I'm enjoying the dry heat. It's much better than the swampy humidity, plus the heat in Florida. I can do this all day. I grew up in a literal swamp. It's fine. This is lovely. There are two choral ensembles at UTPB. The concert choir is made up of everybody who wants to be in choir. They audition, but it's mostly to place them in the right voice part and make sure the group is balanced. The smaller auditioned ensemble is the Falconers, who has a higher burden of learning and expectation of difficulty. Clark said there are 25 to 30 students in that program right now. Although she's only been here a short time, she says she's become attached to her students. I care about them so much. There's really no two ways about it, Clark said. She added that the students need to be cared for and loved. They deserve it. They work their tails off. They are incredibly diligent. They're smart as tacks. They're good, such good kids. I really can't say enough about them. They're ready to accept any challenge that I draw up, at them. Like this semester in our auditioned choir, which is called the Falconers, are singing an Estonian and Arabic for an upcoming concert. They're stepping up to the plate and they're doing a really fabulous job. I am so proud of them, so proud. Their first performance will be at 7 p.m. October 16th at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. It is free and open to the public. I am so grateful to be part of this team. I am so grateful to have supportive and kind colleagues. They are wonderful to bounce ideas off of. They are incredibly smart and incredibly forward-thinking. I am grateful for the kids. I am grateful for how relatively smooth the transition has been. I am really grateful to be in a healthy, happy work environment. This really is a dream come true for me. I know that sounds super cheesy and cliche, but it is so true, Clark said. Desert Dash. Medical Center Health System Foundation will present a Desert Dash race at 7 a.m. October 7th at Mission Fitness, 8050 East Highway 191. Registration begins at 7 a.m. with the different races, beginning just after 8 a.m. Awards for the top runners will be given around 9:45 a.m. To pre-register for the event, visit mchodessa.com/desert-. Tickets start at $20 for the 2K race. Race day schedule of events. 7 a.m. race day registration. 7:45 a.m. welcome and warm-up, 8 a.m. Little Lizard Lap, 8:10 a.m. 10K race start, 8:15 a.m. 5K race start, 8:20 a.m. 2K walk, 9:30 a.m. post-race yoga, 9:45 a.m. awards. Funds raised from the event will benefit the MCHS Foundation, which goes to programs like the Children's Miracle Network, patient navigation programs, and more. OPD investigating jewelry theft. The Odessa Police Department is investigating a theft that occurred September 28th at the Easy Pawn located at 1345 West University. Investigation revealed that an unknown male stole approximately $2,833 worth of jewelry. Anyone who recognizes this suspect shown in the surveillance photos is encouraged to contact Detective N. Troglin at 432-284-2012 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 23-0011585. Say goodbye to the COVID-19 vaccination card. The CDC has stopped printing them. It's the end of an era for a once critical pandemic document. The ubiquitous white COVID-19 vaccination cards are being phased out. Now that COVID-19 vaccines are not being distributed by the federal government, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has stopped printing new cards. The federal government shipped more than 980 million cards between late 2020, when the first vaccines came out, through May 10th, according to the latest available data from the CDC. Federal and local health officials don't expect the discontinuation of the cards to be a particularly big change, since the days of keeping them tucked in purses and wallets to ensure entry into festivals, bars, and restaurants are largely over. If you've held on to your card, it's still valid as proof of vaccination. Otherwise, people who need their COVID-19 immunization records will need to request them just like any other vaccine. In many cases, the clinic, pharmacy, or health department that provided the shot can provide these records. Every state and some cities have an immunization registry, though rules vary on when records are included and options for obtaining copies of your records. For example, Texas requires patients' written consent to be included in the registry. San Antonio Metropolitan Health District spokesman David Andres Alegria said, Other places, including Wyoming and Philadelphia's city-specific record system, require vaccine providers to log all vaccinations. Many states offer digital vaccination records for individuals either online or through an app. Users can save a certificate or a QR code that proves they are vaccinated. And some websites will even track and alert patients when they're due for another one. One of the positives during the pandemic was having increased autonomy on your patient record, especially the immunization record, said Jeff Koreth, who manages the immunization information system in Washington State. Washington offers two digital options for obtaining vaccination records: a comprehensive list of all of a person's vaccinations noted in the state database, and one specific to COVID-19 vaccines. Other states don't have the same options, so it might take longer to get your records. There could also be gaps in state databases. For example, if you were vaccinated by a federal health provider, those records may be tracked in a separate system. As for your old card, if you still have it, maybe don't mail it off to the Smithsonian quite yet. You should save it like any other health record, Wyoming Department of Health nurse consultant Heidi Gurove said. It's always good to keep those in a safe place, she said. 4 million people in the U.S. have received the latest COVID-19 vaccination since it was approved last month, CDC Director Dr. Mandy Coyne said Wednesday, and a total of 10 million doses have been shipped to providers. $1.2 billion Powerball drawing nears after 11 weeks without a winner. A $1.2 billion Powerball jackpot will again be up for grabs Wednesday night after an 11-week stretch without a big winner. But no matter how large the prize grows, the odds stay the same, and they're terrible. It's those odds of 1 in 292.2 million that make the jackpot so hard to win, and that result is such giant prizes for the lucky player or players who manage to pick the game's six winning numbers. The latest Powerball jackpot is the world's seventh largest lottery prize. The last time someone won the top prize was July 19th. Game details. In most states, Powerball tickets cost $2, and buyers can choose their own numbers and single Powerball to leave that task or leave that task to a computer. Powerball drawings are held three times a week at 10:59 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays, with a number selected at the Florida Lottery in Tallahassee. Once the numbers are chosen, it usually takes a couple hours to determine if there is a jackpot winner. If there isn't a winner, state lottery officials release a jackpot estimate for the next drawing. If there is a winner, the jackpot reverts to $20 million and begins the long process of growing until there is another winner. How is the jackpot determined? The jackpot is based on revenue from ticket sales, so the more people who play the game, the faster the top prize grows. However, even though the current jackpot is advertised as $1.2 billion, the lottery has less than half that amount available for the top prize. That's why the cash prize, which most winners take, would be $551.7 billion. Players also can choose an annuity in which that $551.7 billion would be paid to a company that would guarantee a return over 30 years of $1.2 billion. If a winner dies before collecting all of their money, the remainder would go to the winner's estate. What about taxes? State lotteries will immediately deduct 24% of jackpot winnings for federal taxes, and additional federal taxes may be required when filing federal tax returns. State taxes will vary, as some states don't tax lottery winnings at all, and others tax the money at different rates. Players who buy winning grand prize tickets in a state different from where they live will pay taxes based on where they bought the ticket. Do Powerball odds change based on the number of players? The game's odds remain 1 in 292.2 million, regardless of how big the jackpot is and the number of people buying tickets. Those odds mean there are 292.2 million possible number combinations. To put the immensity of that into context, note that for Monday's drawing, players across the country chose just over 20% of those possible combinations. That means nearly 80% of the possible combinations were not selected, so the odds were pretty good that there wouldn't be a winner. Typically, the larger the jackpot grows, the more people play and the more combinations are covered. People also usually do buy more tickets on Saturdays, which increases the chances of a winner for those drawings. Can winners remain anonymous? Rules vary from state to state, with some requiring the jackpot winners to be named, and others allowing anonymity. Some states have more detailed rules, such as Florida, where winners can remain anonymous for 90 days before the state lottery releases their name. Where is the game played? Powerball is played in 48 states as well as Washington, D.C., Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. The other nearly national lottery game, Mega Millions, is also played in those 45 states as well as Washington, D.C., and the U.S. Virgin Islands. The five states that don't participate in the games are Alabama, Alaska, Hawaii, Nevada, and Utah. Murray focuses on bond and media call. In a media call that was mainly focused on Ector County ISD's $436,109,000 bond issue coming to a vote November 7th, Superintendent Scott Murray reminded everyone to register and turn out to cast ballots. The deadline to register to vote is October 10th. If you are a resident of Ector County, are eligible to vote, and have not yet registered, you need to do so on or before October 10th. Murray said you may visit the Ector County Elections Office in person or go online to the Elections Office website. He added that there also is guidance on the ECISD website, ectorcountyisd.org. Early voting starts October 23rd and runs through November 3rd. Election Day is November 7th. ECISD does encourage you to vote. It is an important opportunity that each of us has as a citizen of this country to take advantage of this opportunity to vote, and so we encourage you to do that this voting season, Murray said. The ECISD bond has three propositions, A, B, and C. You don't have to vote for all of them or any of them. The bond will cover new facilities, existing facilities, renovations, long-term maintenance, and a variety of opportunities. All of that information can be found on the ECISD website, Murray said. Proposition B is a little more than $8 million in value, Murray said. The primary component is a concrete overlay that will cover the Ratliff Stadium complex itself. Our stadium is over 40 years of age and is beginning to show its age as the concrete is beginning to crack. As that happens, we need to make sure that we maintain it carefully. So this bond opportunity will provide the ability for ECISD to do just that, he added. The concrete overlay will go on both sides of that stadium to ensure it will last at least another 40 years. In addition to that, we will be renovating for the very first time the restroom facilities on both the visitor and the home sides of the Ratliff Stadium complex, and also adding some lights primarily to the parking lots as well as the track and field facility at Ratliff Stadium, Murray said. The bond won't impact the ECISD tax rate of $1.014 per $100 valuation. Last year's total tax rate was $1.17 per $100 valuation. The state law passed in 2019 requires that ballot language include in a final sentence that says this is a tax increase. Mary said this is true of any type of bond issue. We are educating our voters in that piece. Because it is required by law that every single ballot that is associated with a bond, whether it's a school bond or any other type of bond, requires that language in the ballot, he said. People 65 and over will see zero tax impact. The only things that will change that is if you have added to or renovated your home, or there is a change in state law, but that has not happened. Mary said that has been the law for many years, and the message has been communicated year after year. We will continue to talk about that. It's important that our over 65 crowd has that information, he added. The bond package has been designed to be a 5-year cycle. When we look at all of the items on the bond, it will take approximately 5 years to complete those items. We have a priority list of which are the most important to finish first. Some of the maintenance items are scheduled in years 3, 4, and 5, Murray said. He added that the bond progress will be continuously updated on the district website. In their information sessions, they have had a lot of feedback. Many of the questions are specific to the individual, how the bond would affect a specific school or program like special education. We answer those type of questions as well. In fact, we are keeping a running list and providing a frequently asked question list. You'll find that on the website, again, ectorcountyisd.org. If you click on the bond 2023 link, it will take you to our frequently asked questions, so you can read some of those questions and answers, Mary said. As we receive them, we vet them for answers, and then we post those on that particular website, he added. As a separate note, Mary noted that the annual Permian OHS Gridiron Contest is Friday night. Some 20,000 fans are expected. Gates will open at 5:30 p.m. Bands, cheerleaders, dancers, and football players will also converge. We expect a sell-out crowd, so if you haven't picked up your ticket, you need to do so as soon as you possibly can, Mary said. A traffic pattern has been set up. It is important that we adhere to not only our stadium policies for entrance, but also traffic patterns, which will make all of our lives as we enter and exit the stadium a little bit more exciting this year, Mary said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.